First off, this needs a thank you to Paul Bramadat. I met Paul actually here through his mom. And a few years ago, Paul and I were talking, and he says, you seem like you have a lot of ideas that you want to tell people. And I said, yeah, I suffer from that. He said, if you can come up with a study topic that has the word religion and the word society in it, I'll give you a fellowship at the UVic Center for Studies of Religion and Society. So I thought and thought and thought and came up with something. And I'm thankful to Paul for giving me 6 months of fellowship at UVic. My main focus was on clergy perceptions of low religious attachment in BC. British Columbia, but specifically Victoria, has the lowest percentage of people who claim any religious affiliation. It's around 50% in Victoria who say they have no religion. My interviews, however, wandered hither and yon, and you'll hear some of that hithering and yawning. As little yawning as possible. So in the end, I got to interview 23 retired clergy, retired and nearly retired, experienced clergy. They were ordained from ages 23 to 62, with a median age of 27 at ordination. There were men and women, one rabbi, three Roman Catholics, three Lutherans, three Anglicans, four Unitarians, eight United Church, and two Baptists, all of whom had served on Vancouver Island at some point, usually near the end of their career. Before I get into my further remarks, I'll point out that 80% of them continued in the denomination of their parents, but 20% of them had changed religions either before going to divinity school or after. Sadly, I had no Pentecostals, they wouldn't answer my phone calls, no Mormons, no South Asian or Asian clergy. Hopefully that will be a future study. And my aim was to produce a talk that was going to discuss SBNR and RBNS. Some of you have heard SBNR, spiritual but not religious people, including many Unitarians say that they are not religious people, they are spiritual but not religious, SBNR. And there are also people who say they are religious but not spiritual, RBNS. So you might hear that come up again a few times. I wanted to find out what is it that clergy see when they're up here looking down that way, in a sort of global sense. So I want to tell, in keeping with the Trinity, I've got three things I want to tell you. I'll tell you a bit about what I expected to learn based on earlier reading that I had done. Secondly, clergy definitions of what religion and spirituality are and what they mean to clergy. And third, especially for this service, what trust means in a church setting and why our efforts are largely based on so much trust. So what did I expect to learn? I had not spent a lot of time talking with clergy about what draws them to ministry work, about what they believe, what their day-to-day life involves, and what they think of society. I knew that clergy in Canada tend to be a well-educated group. All Unitarians, and it seems like almost all denominations that I spoke with, have at least a master's degree. And we expect that from them. I had expected that my respondents would be theologians and carers. I expected them to be aggravated by outside forces that seem to be weakening the religious attachments of the people. And I somehow thought that clergy circulated in a sort of multi-faith fellowship in each town, which, while each denomination provided support to the individual clerics. But here's some of the things I learned. Congregational life for many clergy is made up of business meetings, worries about staffing, hospital and other pastoral visits, one-on-one meetings with congregants, prep for Sunday, and the Sunday morning marquee event. Clergy have many bosses, God in some cases, a bishop in some cases, and dozens or hundreds of congregants who, in many ways, shape the life of the church. There are burdens and blessings to clergy life. The burdens include that congregational life beats up ministers. Lack of growth gets blamed on a minister. Loss of children and young families in the congregation are often blamed on the minister. Conflict within the congregation can be blamed on the minister. Lack of social justice action. Congregants and clergy struggle with these in every denomination. Now, just keep in mind, these are 23 retired clergy who felt free to speak about what they've done. Many of my 23 respondents pointed out that clergy and congregants are friendly but not friends. For many clergy, their first posting after their master's in divinity is to a small town or to a 2 or 3 point charge where they've got 3 churches in different towns and they're servicing all 3 of those churches. And loneliness is a big thing for many brand new clergy. Clergy, I was happy to find, are theologians, but many of their congregants are not interested in that. Some Christian people do not read the Bible deeply or carefully. Many Christian church services do not deal deeply or broadly with the Bible other than a shallow Sunday school theology. And some of my clergy respondents wish they could engage deeply with the texts and the stories within the Bible or whatever holy book they were using. And they find it vexing that some congregants do not place high value on deep study of the texts and stories. But this is a conflict that the clergy keep inside. There are many blessings to clergy life. It is a life of service. It's a life of the mind and heart. It's historically seen as a noble profession and still gets priority and special position in society at times. Remembrance Day services. We drag up some chaplain who can do a Remembrance Day service. But also, after a fire or a disaster, the media often go to clergy for commentary. Clergy get sabbatical months or years. They get Mondays off, as long as nobody phones. Clergy get to see lives healed. They get to use creativity, flexibility, and they have accountability, positive and negative. There are many blessings to clergy life. A final statement in this section. I had expected to hear from my respondents about the declines that they viewed in their years in the pulpit. But because most of my respondents were ordained in the 1970s and 1980s, they did not see great declines. Because those declines started in Canada in the 1920s, accelerated in the 1950s and 60s, and were essentially facts of life by the 1990s or so. It trickled into my head that low religious attachment was already a thing when my respondents entered the field, and many of them had only memories from their own childhoods of Sunday services bursting with multi-generational families, young people, and children. So that's some of what I expected to learn and what I learned. Some of the most fascinating was to ask clergy to define religion and spirituality. Again, thinking back to my topic of spiritual but not religious and religious but not spiritual people. Lay people, academics discussing religious studies, often speak of SBNR and RBNS, and we sometimes think we're using the words religion and spirituality as though we assume some sort of objective set of meanings. I wondered if the scholarly definitions of religion and society and spirituality were different from what the clergy use. I was happy to learn that the researchers and the clergy use similar definitions of the word religion. I was impressed by the insistence of my respondents in differentiating organized religion and personal religion. My respondents told me that organized religion is the structure, dogma, rites of passage, the administrivia, the forces that place freshly trained clerics and help them find new positions every now and then, and the office that mails the pension checks. Organized religion can be liberating, and it can be confining. I'm reminded of the often told joke that Unitarianism is the only unorganized religion. But I think if you've worked in leadership in any Unitarian congregation, you know that's not true. Organized religion ideally takes the example and words of Jesus of Nazareth, in the case of most of my respondents, and shows people how to live the way, all caps, or capital T, capital W, the way. Organized religion sets the calendar of observances. Tell us when to celebrate Passover, Easter, Yom Kippur, and Christmas. Organized religion tells us what will happen when we die. and organizes burials and memorials. At least two of my respondents said openly, and others hinted, that they feel that organized religion is dying in Canada. In that vein, two of the more recent graduates from Divinity School relayed that their professors talked even enthusiastically about the end of Constantinian Christianity and a reversion to Pauline Christianity or some kind of Sermon on the Mount Christianity. And I think there's another homily in that phrase right there. So the clergy respondents often talked about personal religion, and I think that for some of you this will resonate. Personal religion includes private prayer, community, the Latin word religio, or binding, one's relationship to the divine, ethics and morals, striving for justice, and a preferential stance toward the poor. At least two of my clergy respondents talked about doing religion as a way of leading to faith. If one goes through the motions and practices, one can be led to a life of connection to the divine. Respondents talked of how organized religion helps people in their personal religion by giving a framework. If one's private religious practice falters, but you continue the community practices, coming to church, doing some of the community things, ideally your personal religion will come back someday. One of my respondents, you could probably guess which one, said it's important to do Jew to be a Jew. And if you do Jew enough, you're a Jew. And your faith will come. And I think he was the one who put the finger on it most clearly. Many others were saying similar things. Several of my clergy respondents surprised me with their de-emphasis on creeds. United Church people say that they are non-creedal, much like Unitarians. However, the United Church services often include the New Creed of 1968, sometimes supplemented by the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed. We probably have people in this room who realized that they were Unitarian partway through the Nicene Creed. Some clergy have difficulty with such creeds, and they know that their congregants do as well. Recitation of a creed, my respondents asserted, does not lead to personal religion, except that community prayer, like community singing, can unite or bind a religious group. Three of them said that Christian religion, at its heart, is the way that Jesus taught. The way that Jesus taught. One said that religion is a via. It's a way. There's a walk to be followed. It's a walk of life, a way of life. We have to bring the heart and the body into balance with the head and not just let the head run away. Whereas my respondents agreed for the most part on the definition of religion, when I asked them to define spirituality, it cut pretty broad. My 23 clergy respondents told me the following impressions of spirituality. And I'll tell some of them until the time clock rings. No. So the following are quotes. I'll do air quotes to start and finish them. How's that? There are people who have lost their faith in religion. Religion has become hollow for them, so they say, I am spiritual, I believe in God, but I don't believe in religion. Spirituality is living the life of Christian faith. To me, spiritual means believing and trusting in Jesus and trying to live the life that he demonstrated and asked for. We are all spiritual. Some of us are less conscious than others. Spirituality is a belief system that energizes you. To me, it's more than a belief system at this point. It's almost an intuitive knowing. And keep in mind, most of these are Christian ministers. Everything is interconnected. Everything is living, and whatever we do affects everything to some extent. We are giants in that we can make a difference. That's today's spirituality. You can be spiritual alone, but you can only be religious in context. My understanding is that a human being is essentially as spiritual as every breath they draw. We are all related to the world in some way. We have an aesthetic response to the world. We have an ethical response to the world.
We are framed to make meaning. We need a place to belong. Spirituality is the internal process that a human being experiences when they feel a sense of connection with the holy or with the earth or with a community of people, where they know that they are part of a larger thing and where they experience that they have value or purpose. Spirituality is the internal experience of what it is to be human in the larger context. Environmental groups often become the spiritual community for people. If the churches are not benefiting from the spiritual sense, I would say it's because the churches are not making themselves appropriately available. Spirit, like the wind, has the power to move us in one direction or another. The central moral question is, what am I to do? Spirituality is about doing. Spirituality is a choice. It's a decision. It's a pilgrimage. I love the idea of pilgrimage. There's no right place or wrong place to be in the pilgrimage. And sometimes you fall in the ditch for a while, but you get up and continue on the pilgrimage. My religious practice is an expression of a spiritual longing and leaning and journey and search. The search for spirituality is alive and well out there, I'm convinced. But the churches have struggled to find valid pathways for the SBNR. I have known people who are spiritual and don't have much religious practice. And finally, we visited the painted caves in the Dordogne in France. They're nearly 20,000 years old. I was terrifically moved by the spirituality embodied in that art. The painters were not religious according to modern classifications. There is something deeply spiritual about how they lived their lives and expressed themselves in their art. There's something in us, even before we developed organized religion, that needs to make sense of the world as we experience it. We had spirituality first. This was an Anglican priest. Unquote. In the blurb for this, in the newsletter for this service, I said that sometimes we have to trust that the organization is going to take care of us so that we might be able to function and others can trust that we will do our jobs. I want you to consider three kinds of trust that face clergy among the many things that clergy deal with. Trust in their institution, trust in their congregation, and trust in themselves. As far as clergy trusting their institutions, many of my respondents spoke about how their divinity schools prepared them for the important work of ministry. They spoke of beloved teachers and challenging lessons. Divinity students who did not trust the process did not finish the program and therefore did not become clergy, and I didn't get to interview them. One story that was spoken with sadness by one of my clergy respondents was that at the Vancouver School of Theology at UBC, one of the professors said, for the first 2 months, you are probably going to feel that your religious sense is being torn down. You need to stick it out, because then we spend the next 2 years building it back up on a firmer foundation. And the sad part of that was, during the first 2 months, many of the students quit once their religion had been torn down. And some of those people had to go back to Asia where they had clergy jobs waiting for them. Many of the clergy, when they had finished angel school, as some of them called it, they needed to find a first posting, and this takes a huge amount of trust. I'm proud to say that the Unitarian Universalist way of matching ministers to congregations is trustworthy when both sides play by the rules. Every so often during a minister's career, they feel the need to move on to another congregation or an administrative challenge. Every denomination has a system for facilitating that, and it is a system entirely based on trust. How about clergy trust in the congregation? Many years ago, I was visiting Ottawa and dropped into the Sunday service at the UU Church. Part of the minister's sermon was a harangue. The church had advertised itself as a social justice-focused congregation and called a minister who was equally focused. Now he was there, and the people did not want to participate fully in social justice. Therefore, trust was partially broken. as many of us who know who have shared in congregational leadership, trust goes both ways. We want the ministers to be good to us. The ministers want the congregation to be good to them. And that leads me finally to clergy trust in themselves. How many of you have heard of imposter syndrome, either in academia or in athletics? Imposter syndrome, first time I learned about it was from Olympic athletes who, even as the gold medal is being put around their necks, they're afraid that someone is going to review the video and find out that they didn't win and they're not worthy. And I have had friends who have been about to prepare their PhD dissertation and they worry up until the last minute, I'm not good enough, they're going to find the flaws, I don't belong here. Many of the retired clergy respondents told me that they had harbored doubts in their decision to go into ministry, in their development at Angel School, and during their congregational lives. There were times when they doubted the value of the work they were doing, or they doubted if they were making the correct decisions. Some of them admitted that their beliefs had changed about God, the holy books, or even about whether they were in the correct religion anymore. And several told me that when they came to Vancouver Island and saw the natural beauty, they fully understood why fewer than half of Victorians are churchgoers. Friends, religious life, even for Unitarians, is based on so much trust. In much the same way as musical life is. There are times to be a leader and times to be a follower, but there is always time for trust. If I were to say something inspirational, I would want you all to take a role in making this place a place where trust runs deep. And then when the fertilizer hits the ventilator, in your personal life or in congregational life, the organization can do its job of loving you and caring for you and supporting you, whether you are in the choir or facing the choir. Thank you. Thank you.